Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingenstein. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingenstein with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. Every week, we talk to some great guests and encourage you to go back and listen to some of our previous podcasts if you are new to our podcast. This week, we're going to revisit a conversation that we had some time ago with Meredith Bell. Meredith is the co-founder and president of Grow Strong Leaders. She has developed some tools to help people develop strong relationships at work and at home. And she's an expert in leader and team communications and author of three books. She's got some great thoughts she's going to share with us. Looking forward to today's conversation with Meredith. Well, tell me a little bit of maybe with our audience, it'd be helpful for them to know a little bit about you, a little bit of your story and your kind of your career journey.
Yes. Well, I always wanted to be a teacher and I started out that way and realized, I get bored with repeating the same routine. So I got my master's, went into school board office work as director of different programs, and realized, I don't do bureaucracy or politics very well. So I ended up doing training. My favorite part was doing training for teachers. So I took that skill of doing training and decided to leave and start my own company with no business background, but a belief in that I could have a positive impact. So I started doing training programs for companies around communication skills, which has always been a real passion of mine. And then I ended up meeting Denny Coates, who became a business partner that we merged our two solo practices in 1990 with another partner. And now the three of us have worked together for 32 years. Wow. And so what happened was around 94, we were looking for a 360 feedback tool, couldn't find one and decided to create one ourselves. Hadn't ever been a software company, but we decided to make that shift. And so we have been in the assessment and development business ever since. And so our true passion is still around communication skills, helping eliminate the drama and the unnecessary pain that happens in so many workplaces because people just don't know how to connect with each other.
Yeah, and that, and we're going to talk more about your book and around communication in the podcast today. But I like to ask this question going back to if knowing what you know now, going back and talking to a 22-year-old Meredith, what advice would you give her?
You know, probably one of the biggest things I would say is lighten up. You take yourself too seriously. And so it's going to be a much better journey if you learn to have fun with everything. And so I think that's probably the big thing. I've been more of a serious, intense person. And I've learned to do that over the years. But I think when I was younger, I didn't appreciate the value of it.
Communication skills, they're so important. I think in one of your pieces, you talk about referred to them as power skills, not soft skills. Talk a little bit about that as far as just kind of around that that whole idea. You know, I think sometimes people dismiss and say, well, that's a soft skill. That's maybe not as important, but talk a little bit about
right.
that.
The ability to create trust, you know, and positive relationships with others depends so much on how we connect with them and how we can relate to them. And so to me, when you learn the value of a skill like listening or how to receive feedback well or give feedback appropriately, whether it's positive or constructive, that is truly a power skill. There's nothing soft about it. For one thing, it's not easy to do those well. When you do them well, though, it's amazing how quickly you're able to establish rapport and trust. And from a very practical perspective, get more done, get better results, because you have a relationship with someone or other people where they feel good about interacting with you, and they are motivated and even inspired to do their best work because of how they feel about themselves when they're around you?
So as a new leader, a lot of our listeners are first-time leaders. They maybe have done well in a kind of individual contributor level position, and now they've moved into, been tapped on the shoulder, said, we see that you have leadership capabilities, and they move them into that position. What are some of the communication skills that you see that sometimes first-time leaders are maybe not aware or blind to as far as the importance of?
Yes. You know, there's kind of a theme here of someone when they get in that position, sometimes feel like, oh, I've got to have the answers to everything, right? I've got to be the answer person. And so there are a number of skills that if you can focus on them instead, it helps you realize the people I'm working with aren't really looking to me necessarily for the answer. If I can learn how to draw it out of them, it's going to be so much more effective and it'll be a better use of the leader's time. So the skills involved with that include asking questions. So instead of when someone comes to you and says, well, what should I do here? Or how should I handle this? Instead of giving an answer, learning to make your first thought, well, what do you think? You know, what ideas have you come up with so far? What options are you considering? So that you find out what kind of thinking have they done in advance, and you help teach them to think for themselves before they come to you looking for answers. And then accompanying that is listening well, so that when they share their ideas with you, you're open, you're curious, you want to learn more, you go a little bit deeper with further questions to help them think through, well, what's the possible impact if you go that route? You know, what do you anticipate being the positive or the downsides of doing that? So I think those two skills combined are really valuable for someone moving into a new leadership role.
I was reading in one of your books talking about the whole question that a lot of times is very cloudy in employees' minds is, what is success? And a lot of times it's not defined as far as the communication. Tell me a little bit about kind of what you're seeing as far as you're talking and to people in business and the importance of defining success.
Well, to me, success, because of my own bias, you know, it's about having positive relationships in life where I help other people feel valued and I'm around others who I know value me. It's not so much accumulation of things. It's an accumulation of people who genuinely care about you and that you care about, and being willing to let them know. And so to me, that's more how many people are in my corner, you know, see me as a positive force for good and a contributor in terms of their own well-being, their own potential. I think to me that is a greater measure of success. How many people's lives have I impacted in a positive way?
So in your book, you talk about the top 10 communication skills. You know, I know we talked about listening as being a part of that. What are a couple other ones that you think are top areas that?
Sure. Well, there's one that actually has three skills, and that's around feedback. This whole idea of learning how to give constructive feedback where the person still feels valued and supported by you, even after you've brought up something that maybe they've said or done that created problems for you or other people. There's a way to do that where they don't feel like they've been put down, criticized, you know, but actually feel like you're still on their team. And another aspect of feedback is giving positive feedback. People get so much more criticism than they do praise. And the positive feedback that we can give, again, elevates that person's opinion of themselves. So they're actually feeling better about themselves and realizing, oh, this person values this from me. I'll do more of it. So you're more likely to get the behaviors you want. And then the third aspect of feedback is receiving feedback. So how do you respond when someone else brings to you information about, say, a situation, a behavior where you said or did something that created problems for others. And this is where we often jump into defending, justifying, you know, offering our reasons instead of really hearing what that person is trying to say and being willing to own up and even apologize and ask, what can I do to make this right? So that they understand that you take their feedback seriously and welcome additional input in the future. Otherwise, you're not going to be getting the information you need to hear from people.
Yeah, that's great. Now we're communicating a lot. In the last few years, we've been doing conversations like this through Zoom and meetings and other technology. Is there any tips that you can give to somebody that maybe is managing virtually? A lot of teams are spread out around the country and around the world. But are there some things that people should be aware of as far as in communicating in a video form versus in person?
Yes. Well, you know, one thing is to just check in and ask the person, how are you doing? How are things going? Because you don't know what occurred in their life before they got on that call, right? Sure. And so just to get a sense of how they are in that moment, because you haven't been in an office with them to see what was going on with them. So I think that's one thing to start. The other is to really pay attention to those nonverbals, you know, any changes in facial expression, body language, tone of voice. Those are often easier to see when you're in person, because you're seeing the whole person. But when you're seeing just a part of them, zooming in on that and not just the words they're saying, so that you pay attention to the full message and you bring up, oh, I noticed you hesitated there, or I picked up something in your tone of voice that tells me you're not really comfortable with what you just said yes to. So it's this whole idea of not taking at face value what you might be seeing on the surface.
Got it. You talk about, and you have another book that's focused around coaching peers. And I think that that is it's an interesting topic in that a lot of times leaders that are going into a team, maybe they've been peers with somebody, and then all of a sudden they're leading a team. Maybe talk about the dynamic of that as far as in coaching your peers as well as leading as a peer that's now in a leadership position.
Mm-hmm. Well, the idea with peer coaching is that organizations, when they bring in an external coach or even train internal coaches, those individuals are typically working with people at the senior levels of leadership. And the fact is, everyone can benefit from coaching. So that's why we wrote that book, Peer Coaching Made Simple, to explain the process where two people can pair up together. And like you just mentioned, it could be two people that are coworkers. It could also be a manager and one of their direct reports, in which case the coaching isn't so much peers, but it's the manager learning to coach the other person. And they don't have to get certified for this. It's the idea of that you have the attitude is, I want to be helpful to this person. And we actually pair that book with the book on communication skills, because communication skills are so hard to change. We're hardwired for a certain way of listening or responding to feedback. And so it helps to work with a peer coach, someone who is holding you accountable and also supporting you and encouraging you as you're working to make these changes. So you set up regular meetings at whatever frequency makes sense. They don't have to take a long time. The idea is just to check in and let them know what you've applied, how you've been working on this skill, what happened when you used it, did it turn out the way you want, so that you learn lessons by processing it with someone else, so that next time you're in a situation to use the skill, you do it even more effectively.
So you talked about, like with peer coaching, of working on skills, of areas that you need to develop in. Can you talk about, just from your perspective, how to master a new skill? A lot of times you get into a leadership position and you realize, okay, I don't have all the tools in the tool belt. I need to learn something, whether you're from, you know, just a completely different function. Maybe you haven't had a lot, exposure to finance or whatever it is that that you need as far as in that. But how do you master a new skill?
Well, it's interesting. The subtitle of that Connect book is Connect with Your Team, Mastering the Top 10 Communication Skills, because I firmly believe we never totally master it, but we certainly can improve. And a big piece of that is recognizing we have to rewire our brains. So we have a hard wiring for a specific way of doing things. And to compete with that and create a new way, what it requires is practice, repetition. It's like building a new muscle. So this is like a new muscle that you're building in the area of one of these skills. So using it again and again and again, so that eventually that pathway in your brain becomes stronger than the old way and you do it automatically. That's a key part of mastering any skill, whether it's, you know, golf, tennis, piano, no matter what, you have to get in there and do the work and do the practice over and over again so that that becomes automatic and comfortable.
So there are certain behaviors, and you said, talk about hardwiring, and there are certain things that we do in our communication that sometimes can be a barrier. We use certain words, or we, you know, sometimes just go back to thinking about what we're going to say next versus the engaging in the conversation. Any practical advice as far as, again, on the listening side of thing? I think that's what most of us struggle with. We're thinking, you know, how are we appearing, you know, versus thinking about the other person and what they're saying.
Yeah. You know, I think a key aspect of improving any skill is letting people know I'm working on this. You know, that wonderful classic Marshall Goldsmith book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. He's saying, you know, everybody's busy doing their own thing. So you have to remind them you're working to improve in this particular area and asking for their support. That goes a long way to letting people know you care about doing right by them. And so if you say, I'm working really hard not to interrupt, as an example. And so if you see me interrupt, just hold your hand up if, you know, we're in an in-person meeting, or just say, I wasn't done yet. And that would be a reminder to me, a cue. So asking people for their help as you're trying to work on a skill is a very practical approach, because you're raising their awareness about your commitment, and you are actually wanting them to help. You know, we all want to cheer for other people and be with them. So I think that's a key element that goes a long way to making you more conscious of using that skill, and also then having a group of supporters who are with you.
Yeah, I just had a very senior executive that is a candidate for us on a search. And one of the questions he had after the interview with the board was, how did I do? What can I improve on next time? And I think that whole learning culture of saying, you know what, I've been doing this a long time and I've got skill set, but I can always improve on what I'm doing. I think.
Yeah. It goes back to that growth mindset, you know, of I'm still learning. I'm constantly learning. And so that's why I use the word mastering, you know. And I'll give you just a real quick example. My two business partners and I, we've worked together over 30 years. When we get on a call together, especially if we're being creative and, you know, about marketing ideas, we can each get excited and start to talk over each other. And, you know, even today, we have these skills, but we don't always use them. And so to have one of us say, hey, I wasn't done yet, please let me finish, it's just a gentle reminder. Oops, I'm jumping in and didn't mean to. So I think where we get into trouble, Mark, is when we get our ego wrapped up and take it personally. If somebody points out, oh, you were interrupting me. If we can just get past that and say, oh, I'm sorry, I'll work on doing better, instead of, well, what's wrong with you? You know, the need to point to other people, when in fact, if we can just acknowledge it, that we're not perfect. We make it safe for other people to make mistakes. And I think that's a huge learning for all of us as leaders.
So you're continuing to learn and grow. You've got a couple books that definitely encourage people to pick up. But are there other books that you recommend to leaders that you think are?
Yes. Trust and Inspire by Stephen M. R. Covey. His earlier book, The Speed of Trust, was excellent. His new book, Trust and Inspire, is all about how you extend trust to others, not so much about being trustworthy. And it's all about helping others achieve their potential. It's a fabulous book. And another one is Lead from the Heart by Mark C. Crowley. And that has a scientific basis for caring about your people and, you know, showing them that you're really committed to them. So it ties in with what you first asked about, this hard skill versus soft skill or power skill, the caring about your people, bringing in that heart element is sound business, because people will perform at their best and want to, you know, bring you excellent results when they know you really care about them.
Those are great. I don't think either one of those have been mentioned before. So that's we're in like our 200th episode. So that's great. Great job. So outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
Oh, you know, my favorite thing is going out with my husband. We're avid bird watchers. So it's a birding is okay. What it's termed. And for, gosh, the past 14 years, I've helped coordinate field trips for the Virginia birding organization. And I really enjoy that. I love helping introduce other people to this wonderful world of nature, watching birds. Getting out with nature in general is just what I really enjoy doing, getting outside. Since I work inside, sure. It's wonderful to get out there and spending time with our two wonderful grandchildren. That's lots of fun.
Yeah. Well, what parting advice would you give to a new leader?
Well, this would probably come as no surprise, but to, you know, love more, judge less, stay curious and open in asking questions, learning about them so that they feel heard, they feel valued, because that's how you prevent turnover. That's how you build loyalty, commitment, high performance, is being willing to demonstrate to others that they matter, you know, that they have value and that they are worthy, and worthy of your time, worthy of your attention, and that you care about their development and growth.
Yeah. Well, great advice. Definitely enjoyed our conversation. I wish you continued success in all you're doing. And how would somebody learn more about your organization and your work?
Thank you. Our website has everything, growstrongleaders.com. And we have our products there and also my podcast, which I've been doing. And the two books I mentioned, by the way, I've had those individuals as guests on my podcast. I'm on LinkedIn the most. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter. So I'd love to connect with any of your listeners who'd like to reach out.
Well, thanks, Meredith. I appreciate it and look forward to staying in touch.
Thank you, Mark. Me too.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.